This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
The fact of the matter is there has been a great deal in the news. Part, obviously, of what the fascist regime is doing is flashbanging us every week, every day. We bomb Nigeria on Christmas Day, go after Venezuela a few days later, kill Renee Good, kill Alex Pretty. And all of that, of course, is to overwhelm us and to make it very difficult and challenging for us to respond. But respond we must. That is what we must do. So Venezuela is not on the front page anymore. That's part of the plan, too. You go, you do what you do, and then you move on to the next thing because it's so overwhelming. But that is ridiculous. We know what happened, and we know we need to deal with it, and we cannot simply forget about it. That's very, very important to understand. And so we want to get back to the issue of Venezuela, hear the issues, get the proper context. And who better to talk to than someone who is a career diplomat? She is a spokesperson for the Afro-Descendant International Cumbe and part of the Bring Them Back movement in Venezuela. And any time we can talk about these nations from an African descendant perspective, it's important because there's something else they don't want us to acknowledge either. I always remind people, we all love Roberto Clemente in this country. Roberto Clemente said he was a Black man. And Dr. King went to visit Roberto Clemente on his farm before he passed away. Also joining us is our dear brother, Obi Egbuna Jr. But first, we want to welcome our sister, Sister Flavia Marquez. Sister Flavia, how are you? Welcome to Make It Plain.
Fine, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me today.
Good morning to you. And Brother Obi, good morning to you as well, Brother Obi. Obi wears so many hats. I didn't know which one. I didn't get to ask you which hat you're wearing today. So tell us, Brother Obi, which hat can we put upon you today in the context of this conversation?
In this conversation, two of them, External Relations Officer of the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association and co-founder of the Shirley Graham Du Bois William Worthy Media and Friendship Collective. But in this case, you're a brother of nearly 40 years.
Well, no, because I'm only 30. So that's not, that can't be true. So you are in your 40s and 50s. First of all, Sister Flavia, let's begin with you. Where are you these days and in what proximity to Venezuela are you?
I'm in the capital, actually. I'm in Caracas.
Okay.
I reside here.
And were you there when the kidnapping, invasion, et cetera, happened?
Yes, I was. I was at home with my family, and yes, we were all together.
And so describe, if you would, that experience and what that was like in the moments that happened. I've talked to others, and they spoke about how fearful they were and just how traumatic it was. That hasn't really been talked about much from a everyday person's perspective, because we don't all, the news, the Western media don't like to focus on everyday normal human beings and citizens. So we'd love to hear about that, if you would.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, of course. Well, it was a shocking moment. for the whole population. We were not expecting this kind of attack, a military attack, because as you all know, South America is an area of peace since forever, since the last wars of independence. So we really didn't believe, I guess, this would happen. But on the other hand, populations, since Venezuelan citizens were getting ready for something like this, but I think not in this asymmetric way. People was getting ready to be able to have communications in case something happens, community radios, or some people wanted to get trained, civilians of every age, young and not that young also. But this took us all by surprise. It was almost like a nightmare. A movie. We couldn't believe, we didn't know what was going on. People at the beginning believed it was maybe it's raining. What are those? Are airplanes? I can't believe we're being bombed. They bomb not only military places, they also bomb schools. One school and one research scientific center. And of course, a civilian building. Thanks God we didn't have massive death. Of course, we did have losses of civilians, putting aside from the militaries. And trauma is the biggest war we have right now. People didn't know if the president was alive, if the congresswoman, first lady was alive. And even the son of the president, who is also a congressman, just reelected, we didn't know where he was until after noon. And the worst way to find out was through social of Mr. Trump saying that he had it, but we didn't know if that was true. So I can tell you that it was very amazing for me to see how much politically we have grown as citizens, because in a situation like this, being the first time this ever happens in Venezuela, you would say people would get to the streets crazy, screaming, maybe being violent, maybe, you know, getting to the stores to crash windows, or, you know, desperation. And that didn't happen. It was the most amazing silence I have ever heard on the streets of any capital. People was silent, in shock, on TV, trying to find out what was going on. And then after we received the official news from our leadership, from the vice president saying that the president had been taken and she was requesting a proof he was alive, and that happened on TV, on national TV, some people scream, for instance, around my neighborhood. I'm not that close from the places where the bombings were. And one lady screamed just like, we know you took them. We want like the U.S. and we will bring them back. So, and that's all. No one answered to her. No one contested what she said. We were in shock. And I think we're still in shock. It's like we are coming slowly back to normal. People is on the street every day protesting and marching, asking for the return of President and First Lady. People has been to the UN headquarters in Caracas, delivering a letter to the coordinator of the UN here to request his intervention. The workers, the women, the youth, the Afro-descendants, and especially because Afro-descendants were the majority in Venezuela, 58% of the population. And we were involved in every step of what happened. People went to the street nearby Miraflores that morning around 10 a.m. to look for the president. What is next? We need to defend, you know, our homeland. Waiting, in shock, but without fear, because we won't be back to the economy. We won't come back to that. So it has been a very unique moment for us, for saying the least.
Obviously, it most certainly has. And what we're hearing from you is not what we hear here. And the perception here is, obviously, there are Venezuelans in the street celebrating the capture.
Not in Caracas.
And you're saying that's not the case there at all. And so what is the citizenry saying now about those in power and the function? I mean, this is a country. It has to function. They have services that have to be. People forget that. You know, y'all running around today wondering who's gonna pick up the snow. Their service, people have to pick up the trash and carry out services in Venezuela too. This is not just some, you know, place that folks are just running amok and nothing's going on. What is it? How are people engaging with the government services, and are people protesting still for answers even now?
Yes, people keep protesting in every way. And even though the attack was in Caracas, our nearby state, La Guaira, which is to the northern part, the coast with the Caribbean, and Miranda, which is very close to Caracas, it was not on the whole country. The whole country has been having public talks, conversation, greeting the son of the president. He has been traveling outside Caracas to meet with people, to assure them that, because people was asking, are they okay? Are they being tortured in the U.S. like they did to our diplomat Alex Saab in the past? What is going on? We knew they were trying to get to a point in history, fabricating, facts, so-called facts, in the drug, the narco-trafficking narrative, to be able to justify something like this. But it's not. It's a very weak case. So people, the common citizen in Venezuela is worried about when is he coming back? We think he will be back. We are doing everything to keep the memory alive and to show him, even by writing letters and postcards, sending to the prison the way we can, that we are here and we won't forget. As I said at the beginning, we Venezuelans, we have been living this kind of attacks from the U.S. since year ago. We have survived several attempted coup d'etat. Last one in 2020 with mercenaries coming through our coast. And it was our Afro-descendant population who stopped them. Common citizens, not military. And they were able to stop them. They went to Yale. I'm talking about John Woodrow. And this silver cup, all this is already officially in the media, because due to a prisoner's change, this mercenary, former Green Beret, is now back in the U.S. and he's facing charges in the U.S. because, of course, he was left out. Like, no one hired him in the first time of President Trump to try to make a coup d'etat. What I'm trying to say is we are a people of peace. We won't get crazy to the streets, which is kind of the strategy that the U.S. and other imperialistic countries are trying to always do when they want to create instability and throw government. We know we're very smart and we're very disciplined, so we listen. So we need to continue in peace, because we need to negotiate like with a firearm to our heads. It's not the head of the vice president or the leadership. It's all the Venezuelans, because whatever we do wrong, our president and the first lady will pay for that. He is a hostage. He was kidnapped. It's more than being in prison. And we know the case is so weak that the DOJ had to draw. Just the next day they arrived in New York, they had to draw before the first audience the charge calling the Cartel de los Soles, which we said so many times was not an organization, that it didn't exist, and it was a blood hunt lie. So there's no way they can prove in court the president is the chief of any narco-trafficking organization or was involved in that, but that was the way they tried to portray it, to explain to the U.S. citizens who are spending all this amount of money in the Caribbean, who are killing innocent people in their boats in the Caribbean. They are still doing it. Three days ago, they killed another person. First time one survivor was rescued on the Pacific Ocean, without any proof of anything, not even before or after. So,
you know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud. especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
Yeah. And to that point, the cartel, which was one of the charges they had to withdraw, people began on social media, began to post the old clip of 60 Minutes saying that that cartel, Cartel de los Soles, was actually one that was created and administered by the CIA, right? And now we don't have 60 Minutes anymore because right-wing Barry Weiss, Trump's ally, is taking it over. And then, so that type of accountability is gone. Let me ask you one more question. I want to bring Obi in. The characterization of Maduro in terms of mainstream corporate media up north here is that he is a terrible leader, a bad guy, a thug, and all of that. Are you saying to us that the people of Venezuela were happy with his leadership and saw him, you know, because the other thing Machado was saying, he's not legitimate, and giving away Nobel Peace Prizes, which you really aren't supposed to give away. If that was the case, we'd all just go get one and buy one. But are you saying that none of that is actually true, and that many Venezuelans saw him or see him as their legitimately elected leader?
Yes, as a matter of fact, in the last election, the only way the opposition and the U.S. could rig the election was by a massive cyber attack on our electoral system that for years, for more than 20 elections of different levels, we have had since 2000, it has been recognized even by the Carter Center. So the only way to, try to bring uncertainty nationally and internationally was to break with the with the custom we always have in Venezuela to receive the result of the elections the same night, by midnight. It didn't take days, never. We knew what was going on. But this past year, what happened was that they were hijacking our electoral system and very conveniently having part of the so-called receipts of the voting machines in several places. So they started to build up for these trying to bring civil unrest that never arrived, thanks God, to us, but contesting the election outside. They always try to portray this bad image. It's like when this clown Juan Guaido declared himself president in 2019. He was barely little known by Venezuelans. He was a recent congressman, just recently elected, and the U.S. decided he was the one. And Trump won, took it to the White House, took it to the State of the Union address. And what was that? Like the government of Wikipedia. So they play with the mainstream media. They try to portray bad leaderships, but Venezuela was actually growing economically in 2022. Inter-American Development Bank recognized it was the fast-growing economy in South America with 5%. We have more than 900 sanctions, and these sanctions affect every area of Venezuela. They said, no, those are targeted sanctions for this and that, but then you have the over-compliance. So even to bring medicines that, by the way, they bomb containers with medicines and medicines for dialysis also on January 3. So even to bring medicines, it was super more expensive and a nightmare because people wouldn't like to lose their business with the U.S. or other countries by selling to Venezuela. Right. So right. President Maduro is a man of the people. He was a bus driver. He is a union leader. He's a father. He's a grandfather. He always came with the family, reachable by people. He's not a distant figure. And, you know, the demonizing of the media has been working for years trying to portray him like that.
Obi Igbuna Jr. also here with us. Obi is for a long time been a liaison with the government of Cuba. and Africans here in America. Obi, what's your take? And you have been hosting our dear sister Fabia on many occasions before the media. So you also have sort of a cumulative perspective on what's going on down there. Talk to us about that, if you would.
Yes, of course, I don't want to, it's hard to come behind Fabia because our main focus, first of all, thank you, you're dependable as usual, for giving Fabia this platform and the Venezuelans, because those of us in solidarity and camaraderie with them, we should be giving them platforms right now so that whatever we do to assist and fight with them side by side, we're listening to them give their recommendations to ensure that we're maximizing potential. So thank you so much for that. Last night we were together and she brought up an awesome point that the diplomatic hostility intensified against Venezuela when the late President Chavez broke ties with Israel. And when you think about that, we know that a lot of times when we look at the blockade on Cuba, we don't talk about the role of Israel being one of the only other countries in favor of the maintenance of that. But when she left the meeting we were in last night, I remembered something, Brother Mazzamella, and I believe you and I had this conversation both privately and in a public platform. Venezuela did the unthinkable in 2003. Comandante Chavez gave former Zimbabwean president, the Pan-African giant and icon, Robert Gabriel Mugabe, the Bolivar Award, the highest honor in Venezuela, which is patterned after Cuba's Martí Award. And this is right after the land reclamation program started in Zimbabwe, and Zimbabwe directing Namibia and Angola in preventing the United States from reinvading the Congo in 1999. Susan Rice's coming out party, if you will. So Venezuela has a socialist revolution without question, and they make no apologies for it. But the nationalist and Pan-Africanist character of their revolution makes them very appealing. This is a country, when Fabia talks about Cumbe International, understand what that means. These are people who are saying they're not Black American, they're not African American, they're not Afro-Caribbean, they're not Afro-Latino, they are African descendants. Put that in the context of 1962, when the Bay of Pigs invasion failed on Cuba and they imposed sanctions, they said Cuba's not a threat just because of its ability to maintain its direction, but the influence they give others. When you see how quickly the U.S. deposed of Allende in Chile in 73, how they invaded Grenada in 83 and assassinated Maurice Bishop, how they introduced our community into crack cocaine to overthrow the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. So conjure up, and that is the reason why media has deliberately had all the images of President Maduro in custody after being kidnapped. You see the DEA behind it. That is to send a message. And 2 years ago, we had Fabia, Sister Fabia, and the Nicaraguan ambassador to the United States at the time, Lorenzo Andino, Anton White, the youngest man convicted as a kingpin for crack cocaine in U.S. history at the age of 20, his co-defendant Eric Hicks, Freeway Rick Ross, and we had them next to Fabia, the Nicaraguan government, Africans in Honduras, Colombia, and Mexico. It was the first people-to-people's encounter dealing with drugs and gun violence on a hemispheric level. While you were in Durban 25 years ago, Brother Mazzamella, dealing with the United Nations Conference on Racism, Xenophobia, and Other Related Intolerances, some of us strategically went to El Salvador because that's when the Bush administration talked about Plan Colombia. And this was a mission under the auspices of fighting drugs and guns, but they were actually taking the next phase in their efforts to militarize and weaponize the Americas. Back to the sanctions. President Obama introduced these sanctions, but that was consistent. And the sanctions on Venezuela are modeled after the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001. If you go back and look at the methodology, if you go back and look at how they use the word targeted and what have you. And when President Obama imposed these sanctions, it goes back. People forget his words during his first inauguration. He said the might of our military must be matched by the strength of our diplomacy. So that sanctioning on Venezuela made them vulnerable to the military invasion and the military attack. Bernie Sanders attacked President Maduro in 2019. Bernie Sanders also voted in favor of the sanctions on Zimbabwe when he was a congressman in Vermont. So we say that to take this out of the realm, people who look at life through the lens of the what we call the never-ending lovers quarrel between Democrats and Republicans. But we can show you consistently that when it comes to regime change, especially in the Americas, because, and then the sanctions of Venezuela were pushed through by Menendez. And I challenge anyone to distinguish Bob Menendez from Marco Rubio. Menendez, who wanted Assad Shakur extradited from Cuba. So this whole question, and of course, we're saluting all week long the 32 Cuban combatants who lost their life defending President Maduro. They are being honored all over the world. And so this week, Sister
Obi, what were they? Were they bodyguards? Is that
secure? They were security. They were bodyguards. They were part of the they were part of the military. So in addition to Cuba and Venezuela shocking the world with their collaboration of their effort to eradicate glaucoma in the Americas, Operation Project Miracle, which we'll be dealing with on Sunday, Cuba has helped them in every Cuba helped them in every way possible. But Venezuela, the Venezuelan Revolution is 25 years old. And when you put that in the context of world revolution, Lumumba lasted 6 months in the Congo. Osage for Dr. Kwame Nkrumah lasted 9 years. Modibo Keita in Mali, who died in prison after being removed by the CIA, he lasted 7. Ben Bella in Algeria lasted 4. So the fact that in the enemy's backyard, they have maintained their revolution. And the other thing, too, is on the 7th of December, President Maduro organized a meeting with 66,000 union leaders, one of the biggest assemblings of union leaders. Why is that important? Because the CIA has always used the international branch of the AFL-CIO, the International Labor Solidarity Center, to infiltrate movements and nations in the Americas. So even though they're an independent entity now, and I think they're about to be dissolved, but however, the methodology is in play. So President Maduro understood this. When you look at the former Vice President Mike Pence trying to get Venezuela removed from the Organization of American States, the kidnapping of Alip Saab. And by the way, in terms of who President Maduro is, he's Phyllis Wheatley, kidnapped at 7 years old when Senegal and Gambia were the same place. He is Ileana Gonzalez, kidnapped as a 5-year-old 26 years ago. And of course, all of our ancestors, for that matter, who were put on captivity vessels known as slave ships. So that's who he is. And we stand by him. We stand with them. And we're going to continue to keep working with them, using media, organizing, and the initiatives that they've come up with. President Maduro and President Díaz-Canel of Cuba were talking about an agricultural empowerment campaign. This is at the same time that Captain Traore in Burkina Faso was talking about it. This is right at the same time that Southern Africa has doubled down on their commitment. And right here in Brandywine and Upper Marlboro, we're going to be training children in agriculture. And at the end of the year, we're going to have an All-African Children's Agro Expo with all those nations we mentioned in conjunction. Education. You met Ambassador Chucho Garcia Matsumela 9 years ago in Selma when we brought him there to address the civil rights community there. So we're going to organize a meeting at the end of March, bringing together all our museums, all our cultural centers, all our bookstores. And Venezuela has... no one has pushed the African personality stronger, more aggressively, more militantly than Venezuela. And as she gave you the breakdown, Venezuela is Southside Chicago. Venezuela is Southeast DC, depending on where you are.
Right.
So Venezuela is Chocolate City. So, and lastly,
Venezuela is Minneapolis. I want to do this in the interest of time, though.
Okay.
And I'll come back to you in a minute, Obi, because I have you expound on what the question I'm asking Flavia. Sister Flavia, Talk to us more about Afro descendancy in a country like Venezuela. You're doing that. That's not talked about enough. We still tend to think of these countries in Latin America and in Brazil and in the Caribbean as something other than African, as if, not to mention indigenous. And by the way, we will, one of our indigenous brothers from Minneapolis may join us shortly to give us an update. But, you know, as if these current formations of nation states just came to be, not that they were developed by African people and indigenous people first as the first people there. What's the spirit like there in that regard? Is there an embrace of
course, yes,
Afro descendancy in the main and across the board? You know, because we know the folk come here to Florida and they're discouraged. We don't do that. We're not Black. So what is it like there at home?
Yes, well, in Venezuela, we had an Afro-descendant movement forming since the 80s. As Brother Olby mentioned, Chucho Garcia, Ambassador Jesus Garcia, was one of the main leaders, figures, researcher, historian, and activist, Venezuelan, and the Afro-descendant issues. And he participated in Durban when we were able to bring this new concept of Afro-descendancy. But in Venezuela, as most of the majority of the countries in Latin America, we were fed this concept of there's no racism, we are mestizos or mestizaje, and we are all equal, and it's about social difference, but not race difference. And, you know, that was the way to sell civil rights movements to Latin America after the 50s and the 60s, after the 60s in the U.S. So what people would tell you before Chavez specifically, and I'm talking about general knowledge, not the specific groups that were struggling since the 80s. After the 2000, what before 2000, what common people in Venezuela will tell you is no. We are not like the U.S. We never chase Blacks. We are all equal. I call you Black or Negrita just because out of love. And, you know, they didn't recognize the racism. Even we had, still have some, but we had more endo-racism among our Afro-descendant communities. We went there, you know, with the straightening the hair, rejecting our bodies, rejecting our culture. But we inherited at the same time a great amount of culture in language, in music, in food from African descent, especially from Benin and Angola. We know now in certain areas of the countries, even very close to the capital, like in Miranda State, in Aragua State, we still know and use words that come from our ancestors. So after Chavez recognized himself as an Afro descendant, he was the first president and the only one until now recognizing himself as an Afro-descendant. The subject was put over on the table, and that was craziness in our society because people said that issue was not an issue until he bring him up. There was no racism. We were so happy. Oh, yes, but why the poverty? The majority on the jails, and, you know, the people that couldn't read, that was not receiving enough food, were all brown and darker colors. Is that a coincidence? It's not. It's because the policies were racist. I, as a diplomat, I was able to bring this issue to my Ministry of Foreign Affairs in one of the speech, and I challenged them to look in history. We did have a racist policy to bring Italians, Spaniards, and Europeans into Venezuela in the 50s, because we had this belief that went to our consulates abroad saying that we needed to improve the race. So we were favoring them to come. And if you had a child with a Venezuelan woman or with a Venezuelan man, you instantly would have the citizenship. How do you call that? That is trying to whiten the society, and we were rejecting Arabs and Chinese immigration. And a lot of people does not know that was laws that we had for our foreign affairs consulate in reading. That was silent. So in Venezuela, we used to have a silent racism, which is worse than having an open one, I think, because you go into that game without knowing you are being excluded. Then you are part of that racial profiling in every day of your life. So after President Chavez declared himself Afro-descendant, these movements were able to bring knowledge, to start educating and empowering our people, not only the youth, but also, you know, the adults. And after we started this great moment in our Afro history to rescue our Afro heroes in our independence, to put them in the books. So to put them in the pantheon where we have independence heroes who were in the majority white people, to rescue that we are not only about music, drums, and sport, that we gave more and still giving more to our society in every area, and also to count ourselves for the first time in the census of 2011. That's why I'm telling you we're 58%. And I'm sure we're more, but it will take more education to get the people recognize himself as an Afro-descendant and power in your roots. But we keep moving forward. And as Brother Ovi mentioned, we celebrated these international congresses, especially in 2019, to try to bring people into Venezuela to see the reality in their own perspective with their own eyes, because this clown declared himself president, and outside Venezuela they believe he was in charge. So we had a big international summit of Africans and Afro-descendants in Caracas in November 2019, and that's where International Cumbre for Afro-descendants, which is anti-imperialistic, was born. We received representatives for more than 90 countries, including Africa, Europe, the US, and of course, Latin America and the Caribbean. And we sat down to design a plan to move forward in the common causes, because at the end, we all have the same problems, just in different places and different languages.
Mm-hmm. So, and you know, Obi, I want you to talk about, too, Hugo Chavez. I remember that him declaring himself Afro-descendant, as did Fidel Castro. I want you to talk about that. Before I do, I always like, you know, and I know Obi will appreciate this, too. We always have to put stuff where people can get it. Now, I mentioned Roberto Clemente. In 71, the Pittsburgh Pirates fielded what was called the first all-Black baseball team on the field, 9 Black players, right? Since that time, it has changed. It's no longer, it's Black and Latino, and that's fine. But it shows you how the effort, well, back then, in those days, it was no delineation. Black, Afro-Latino, now for well, we got it. Now, it wasn't really, everybody wasn't really Black, Mark. They were, you know, Black and Latino. But I'm just showing that you all to see how this evolves and the struggle that we're up against to do something about these delineations and these lines. And while we're talking about Venezuela, this is a nation of African people. It's not what Trump wants you to think that it is. All right. You know, and y'all need to stop listening to man killing white folks now. So, you know, we got to understand that. really. You know, I was telling people that if you ever want to amuse yourself, listen to the LBJ tapes. He told Dr. King, I got Civil Rights Act, Dr. King in 64. I can't do a Voting Rights Act a year later. Then people in Alabama killed James Reeb and Viola Luzzo and others. And George Wallace said, you can't do this to me. And LBJ said, yeah, but you're killing white folks. Now, we are in a moment of madness. And I don't want Venezuela, Flavia and Obi, to come out ahead. It's whatever the news cycle. The news cycle ain't even 24 hours no more. It's 3 hours. I'm not even looking at the news. Something might have happened just now. ICE might have killed somebody today. Let me get on Twitter and see. X. Obi, talk to us about the importance of Afro-descendancy. And I just want you to tap that historical point. Hugo Chavez, Afro-descendant. Mm-hmm. Y'all remember our brother Hugo Chavez stood in the UN after Bush and said, I can still smell. See, people think Trump is with we. Some of us, I'm not old enough to remember Reagan. Obi is. But some of y'all are old enough to remember Reagan and George W. Bush. I was just a child then. But those are these were people. These were bad actors, literally, before Trump. MAGA was Reagan's slogan. But talk to us, OB, about that relationship between Cuba, Fidel Castro, Afro-descendancy, Hugo Chavez, and Afro-descendancy, if you would, please.
Okay, well, President Chavez took it a step further. He said he was African. He'll let people say they're Afro-descendants to catch up to the full identity. And that's why we were saying it was so special, because remember, when he embraced Zimbabwe, not one member of the Black Caucus voted against those sanctions. Only four abstained, but they almost unanimously voted in those sanctions. So for him to do that at that particular time, his role during the African South American summits, talking about what Venezuela was doing, the initiative to provide heat and air conditioning to poor families in the Bronx when they had control of CITGO. So they were covering all bases. And I had the honor of co-producing three music albums with Mutulu Olubala, affectionately known as M1, of the internationally acclaimed hip hop group Dead Prez. Thanks to Sister Fravia, the number one hip hop group in Venezuela, B2Aya, gave us three songs. They claim to be Yoruba. So when we talk about the Santeria Yoruba culture in Cuba, it also filled into Venezuela. And the 26 years ago at the Organization of Caribbean Latin American Youth in Cuba, Comandante Fidel Castro said the kidnapping of Ilian Gonzalez resulted in people, the average U.S. citizen, learning more in 4 months about Cuba than they have in 41 years. The average U.S. citizen has learned more about Venezuela in the last month than they have the last 100. And that is very important because you know this, Matsumela, we have a tendency to treat Cuba, Venezuela, and Puerto Rico, because they're Spanish speaking, like they're not part of the Caribbean. That's the equivalent of saying Egypt, Morocco, and Libya and Algeria are not part of the African continent because of the Arab-occupied North. No. So this has made, and it's going to make Venezuela appealing. When people find out they have free education, when people find out they have free health care, when people find out how they model their nation and how embracing they are of their African identity, that's going to make them more appealing. So in these meetings we're having, we're not only looking at what people can do to stand with them, but because they maintain their ministries and their commitment to people-to-people relations, the other day I wrote Maulana Karenga a letter asking for an eighth principle in Kwanzaa that deals with liberation and organized resistance dedicated to Kwame Ture. We've started conversations where we're going to have-
told me about that, y'all. I told him I'd have been scared to do that. I wouldn't do that, Dr. Karenga. He didn't.
So we're having-
That would be Dr. Karenga. I didn't give him that idea. That's-
Okay. No, he knows. So- we're going to have all the African independent schools in front of Cuba and Venezuela to talk about a memorandum of understanding. Like we said, all of our communities that are in D.C., one out of five children go to bed without food. So agriculture in the urban center, as well as reintroducing it to children in the rural center. Thanks to Fravia and Ambassador Chucho Garcia, this is going to shock you, Matsumela, because of their commitment to what they call African epistemology. My father's dissertation was on the role of literature and epistemology in the decolonization process. Ambassador Garcia got that put in the archives of the University of Caracas. Fravia was collecting books from us. It started with the book about Booker T. Washington by Dr. Tyrene Wright. And they're translating books in Spanish so African children can read them. This is one of the campaigns that they were on. So we're tapping them back into bookstores in our community so that process can be reignited.
Right.
So they are all type of people-to-people initiatives that are going to be intensified as a result of this aggression. So whether we're talking about the National Guard in D.C., Memphis or Chicago, Cop City in Atlanta, what's going on in Minneapolis, the decision to deal with fascism is only going to intensify our resistance. So we welcome the challenge, because that's one of the most beautiful characteristics of history itself, the challenges it imposes on the historical moment. So we stand with Venezuela.
Yeah, no question about it. And I always appreciate our brother Obi keeping our international perspective. A lot of times they like to confine us as African people only to whatever our local situation is. And throughout history, the Malcolm X's, the Du Bois's, the Garvey's, and even the book I had on the other day with Dr. Levitt for King Day, Beyond Borders, Dr. King's Pan-Africanism, breaking outside of the boundaries of a local geographic location is always a challenge. And so that's the lane our brother Obi has always been in. And he inspires holds us accountable to that. Y'all got to be broader. We live in a universe. As a matter of fact, let me just also lift up the name of our newest ancestor, Dr. Charles Finch, speaking of universe, who wrote the textbook on the African universe, at the African creation of science and technology and the study of the universe. We are not just on this block. Many of us spend most of our lives as Black folk. I would dare say even those who are struggling in Venezuela, being born and going to school and working and living and dying within the same 10 block radius. But our minds, what Brother Obi's been trying to tell us for the many years he's been out here much longer than me, our minds have to expand. We are a people of the world. I am an Afro-Venezuelan just by virtue of my DNA. Just because I don't go somewhere and have visited doesn't mean I'm not who I am. And the same for our sister Flavia. There's no space between me and this dear sister. All right. And the work that she's doing. Chase Ironeyes, who's an attorney in Minneapolis representing the indigenous people who ICE and Customs and Border Patrol ain't even supposed to be on the street, y'all, by the way, supposed to be on the border. They're not just arresting Spanish-speaking people and killing white folk in Minneapolis. They are rounding up indigenous people as well. So he's in court, as is Big Indian Jossie, our brother, so they may not be able to join us. So in the moments remaining, Sister Fravi, what assignment would you give the audience? I've never liked talk radio. I like do radio. So tell us what's next for the movement there, and are there any ways you would enlist our and the public support?
Well, it is what you just said. It was so powerful. You empower us with that. And I was mentioning this last night in this other interview. It's like we need to understand we are all in this together. What happened to Venezuela is not only Venezuela. It's a geopolitical situation that will open. They did it because they think it will open better spaces for them to maneuver around the world. But it also will bring consequences all over, political, social. It's time to open our eyes and understand we are the same. We are in the same struggle. And let's go back to the basics. What is the basic? Human rights, equality, peace, the right to be in peace, the right to have education, the right to have food. It's like, it is very, for me, I live in the US because I work there, as Brother Obi mentioned, at the embassy. And first, I can tell you that, as you said, there's no space between you and me. It was very eyes-opening for me to get there and realize that my brothers and sisters, Afro-Americans, just smiled back at me when I entered to a store. Even they didn't even know if I speak English or no, if I was Brazilian, Dominican, because they never believed I was Venezuelan because the way of the country has been portrayed. But they were automatically in solidarity. It's like so polite, so even caring. We have closeness. We need to understand that. We need to be able to break those obstacles. They have been trying to put us with these divisions because of religions, because of you were born here, there, different language barrier, and come together. Maybe this sounds like better romantic or, you know, utopia, but in reality is what we are doing. It is what this system is trying to pull us apart all the time. For instance, I remember when I was there, I think it was Obama's term or before, Latinos, we were the enemy of the moment because we were taking all the jobs from the African-Americans. So they tried to separate us. Every day you could read in the newspapers how Latinos, we were robbing the space, the income, the salary, and the benefits of the African-American community in particular. Why? Because we are alike. So they have to put out their ideas to divide us, to make us afraid of each other. And then, right. And the fact is that we have the same origin. We come from the same history of mistreating our society, trying to bring down and separate our families, trying to make us ashamed of ourselves, of our nature, like trying to disempower all the time. So the best way we can move forward is like, trying to at least question what the media is saying, trying to see the equalness or what is common between my brother. We are not in bubbles anymore. Social media, if not the best tool, is a tool to get to know the others, to get to see we're asking for the same things in different places. We're suffering same struggles. And at the end, if we're not suffering now, maybe eventually we will be suffering in the future. Like this story about the farm, no? If they come for me in the night, they will come for you in the morning. So
That's right. Very, very quickly, I just want to be clear. The current regime in power, successes to Maduro, and it looked kind of like they might have been in on it. That's how they got to Maduro so quickly. Do we trust them? I mean, is it, in other words, is the CIA working with those people or having a hidden hand in the current situation? Do we know?
Of course. Yeah. Well, CIA, just like, let me say, just like they have been always there. It was officially recognized by President Trump. If he announced CIA was coming to Venezuela, that he gave permission, you know, to do this. And there are stories saying that it was because CIA was involved against Marcos Rubio's plan to obliterate the leadership in Venezuela, that at the end we didn't have more bloodshed, because CIA made them unbelievably think that we will be another Gaza, but forbidden in South America. And if what was important for the administration is the cash flow, the resources, you cannot get out the cash and the resources with this complete instability in the political government. So they were responsible partially of framing this in some way. Of course, we really don't know that they could keep off, like, you know, sabotaging and with a pistol to our heads, as we said, because they took the president and the first lady and they are alive. So it's like, if you do anything, we will kill you. If you do this, they are all the time menacing with violence, even with bombing again, if they don't follow part of what they ask. So it's a very difficult situation. I don't know.
That's important to understand. And we can do a whole show on the oil. Even the oil people are like, we didn't ask you to do that. They told him that, and the thing, you're out of control, Trump. Flavia, our dear sister, has been with us and we so appreciate her. I'm afraid our time is up. We will do this again. We want to call on you again to give us updates from a very real perspective. Y'all, many of our ancestors stopped there before they came here. So when these foundational Black Americans want to debate with me, so y'all don't want to acknowledge that, but I tell them to debate with Obi. They scared of Obi. When they call me, want to debate me, and said, I'm gonna sick Obi on y'all, then they don't want to talk about it no more. Flavia Podcast, we appreciate you. Obi Igbuna, as always, appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
We will talk again. We thank you all for joining us on MIP 89.3.
We'll talk.
It has been made plain.